This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, the Attorney General of Massachusetts issued a report on child abuse and cover-up scandal in the Archdiocese of Boston. On one hand, it damns the Catholic hierarchy for what Attorney General Thomas Riley described as one of, if not the greatest tragedy ever to befall the children of Massachusetts. On the other, it concludes that there are no legal grounds to prosecute church officials. After a 16-month investigation, Riley said at least 789 minors had been molested, and that the actual number was probably closer to 1,000. The abuse took place over six decades and involved at least 237 priests and 13 other church employees. The mistreatment of children, Riley said, was so massive and so prolonged that it borders on the unbelievable. While Boston has been the epicenter of the sex abuse and cover-up scandal, many dioceses around the country are under investigation. Hundreds of priests have been removed from their positions, and many of them face criminal charges. But so far, no bishops have been indicted for moving abusive priests from parish to parish, or for failing to report sexual abuse to the authorities, or for failing to prevent it. Today, we'll talk about the findings in this new report and what effect they might have on how church leaders deal with sex abuse allegations in the future. We also want to hear from you. What do you think is the proper course of action now for the church and for prosecutors in other jurisdictions? Has this scandal made you reevaluate the role religion plays in your life? Call us at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in Boston is Walter Robinson, editor of the Boston Globe Spotlight team that's been investigating the abuse scandal over the past several years. And welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be on with you, Neil.
What from your point of view, are the key findings in yesterday's report?
Well, beyond the fact that there's an official public document after a long criminal investigation, though it yielded no indictments, does provide closure in some ways. It puts a lot more facts on the record than have been revealed, despite the extraordinary number of disclosures we've had here. The main surprise, the big surprise for us, is that the extent, the number of priests involved in abusing children was substantially greater than the very high number we already knew of. And let me explain that. We have reported that more than 150 priests have been identified as having faced credible allegations, and our period was 50 years. It was since 1950. And our actual number is 161. That includes a handful of religious brothers and about 20 priests from religious orders, and the rest, about 140, are diocesan priests. What Riley came up with, the Attorney General in his report, was a total of 237 priests, and there are actually a few brothers in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a number that's almost 50% higher than any of us had known. I mean, he did go back to 1940, although there were very few allegations from that decade.
Why is it that the report concludes there are no legal grounds to prosecute anybody? Is it the statute of limitations?
Well, there are a number of issues. The first is that Massachusetts does not have, as New Hampshire did and used to get a plea bargain with the church, we don't have, did not have until last year, a child endangerment statute, which says anybody who puts children in danger of abuse can be prosecuted. We did not have a requirement that, although caregivers had to report allegations of sexual abuse of minors, clergymen were exempted from that, again, until last year. So there could have been no violation there. There are other issues. For instance, people say accessory before and after the fact of a crime that could have been used. But number one, those would be outside the statute of limitation in most cases because the higher-ups hid this problem for so long. And second, in order to get a conviction for something like that, you have to, in effect, prove that the bishop and the cardinal intended for the priest to molest children. And that obviously would be impossible to prove if it were even true, and no one believes it was true.
I'm sure somebody has been asking, wouldn't an ongoing cover-up get you around the statute of limitations problem?
Well, they looked at that, and they found in that case that did not apply as well. There is an issue of corporate culpability, but then you have to prove that the person in the corporation who did the crime was doing it in furtherance of the objectives of the corporation, and clearly the objective of the Catholic Church is something quite counter to what some of these priests were doing.
What has been the reaction of church leaders in Boston to this scathing indictment?
Well, the church has not formally reacted at all. The chairwoman of the Cardinal's Commission to set up new policies and procedures said yesterday that she thought that the Attorney General in his rhetoric went a little bit too far. Most of the priests whom we've talked to over the last year and a half are almost numb at this point. And I had an email exchange with one priest yesterday who expressed surprise at the increased numbers and expressed dismay that the church itself was not able to sort of disclose this. I mean, there's quite a bit of information in the Attorney General's report that the church, though it promised to cooperate publicly in the back and forth, was resistant to giving up documents.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Our email address, totn@npr.org. Let's get a question from Tom, who's in Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Tom, are you there?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Yes, I just had a question to put it in perspective. The 237 priests, what number is that out of? Is that out of 2,000 or 2 million or... what's the denominator there to give us more of a percentage?
Well, that's a good question. The Attorney General did not break down how many of those were diocesan priests, but in our sample, about 85% are diocesan priests. So if we're talking about 200 priests of the diocese as opposed to Jesuits or Augustinians, that would be out of the number who served over that 60-year period. And nobody knows for certain what that number is. It is somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 priests at the diocesan level. So if what you're getting at is what is the incidence of this, it is clearly much, much higher, at least in this archdiocese, than the 1% figure that the Conference of Catholic Bishops insisted was the sexual abuse rate among priests up until a year or so ago.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. One of the things, before we let you go, there were many people who worked in the Archdiocese of Boston who have later gone on to work elsewhere, people who have been identified by name in the report as people who were involved in perpetuating this cover-up. Do we know the current whereabouts of some of the bishops who were involved in this?
We know all of them. Bishop Thomas Daly is the bishop in Brooklyn, which is Brooklyn and Queens, which is the fifth largest diocese in the country. Now Archbishop Alfred Hughes is the Archbishop of New Orleans. Bishop Robert Banks is the Bishop of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Bishop William Murphy is the Bishop of Rockville Center Diocese on Long Island, which is the eighth largest in the country. And Bishop John McCormick is a neighbor of ours here. He's the bishop of the New Hampshire Diocese.
Well, Walter Robinson, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Glad to be on, Neil.
Walter Robinson, editor of the Boston Globe Spotlight team that's been investigating the abuse and cover-up scandal over the past several years. We reached him at his office in Boston. Joining us now on the phone from Manchester, New Hampshire, is Peter Pollard, who was a victim of sexual abuse by a Catholic priest, and it's very good of you to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
You came forward 20 years after you were abused to report what took place. What happened when you reported it?
Well, I actually wrote a letter to the Archdiocese of Boston to Cardinal Law, and I was contacted by John McCormick, who's now the Bishop of Manchester, New Hampshire, who was working in Boston then. And he invited me in to meet with him. And at the first meeting, he asked for the information about my abuse. And at the second meeting, he told me that they had sent the priest away for an evaluation, that they had determined that he had sexual issues, but he wasn't sexually deviant, and that they could find no reason to not place him back in a ministry. So...
Nothing happened.
When was that? 1987.
Now, 15 years later, what's your reaction to the report yesterday by the Attorney General in Massachusetts?
Well, I'm very disappointed that they weren't able to find any way to indict anybody. I think that it's very important for survivors of sexual abuse and the families of survivors, and I think for Catholics in general, that these bishops who made these decisions to protect these priests, that they be held accountable in some way. And a legal criminal way would be, I think, an appropriate way for them to be held accountable. But barring that, I think they should be forced to resign.
Obviously, Cardinal Law has resigned under pressure last December in what was considered an important moment. But as we've pointed out, many of these other people are still involved in very senior positions in the Catholic Church around the country. And this is just from the Archdiocese of Boston. Obviously, this does not affect civil suits, but you're saying in that respect you don't think that's adequate.
No, I think these people hurt victims. John McCormick hurt me with his reaction. In many ways, it was as painful to go to seek help from someone who was in a position to help and to be dismissed by him as it was as the initial abuse. These people, we were raised to believe, were God's representative on earth, and we expected them to have some moral basis to operate from. And I think it's criminal that there's no way for them to be held accountable. And I think now it's incumbent upon the people in the state of Massachusetts and across the country to go and force the legislatures to pass laws that will make sure this never happens again.
Your trust, in a very profound way, was violated not just by your abuser, as you point out, but by your church. How has this, if you don't mind my asking, how has this affected your spiritual life and your relationship with the church?
Well, I haven't been a practicing Catholic for 35 years. Catholicism is something that I was born and raised with. It feels like a cultural part of who I am. And the loss of it, the inability to practice Catholicism or really to find, I think one of the most difficult impacts of this for me has been the loss of the ability to maintain a spiritual practice and to pass that on to my child. I have a 7-year-old who hasn't really had any exposure to any kind of spiritual practice because I've struggled to find a way to do that would feel safe to me. And I think that's one of the hardest legacies of this is that loss.
Peter Pollard, thanks very much for speaking with us. We know this is never easy to talk about, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peter Pollard is now a social worker in Massachusetts. He spoke with us from Manchester, New Hampshire. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with Peter Steinfels, the author of a forthcoming book, A People Adrift, The Crisis of the Roman Catholic Church in America, and we'll take more of your calls. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing a new report by the Massachusetts Attorney General's Office. It says, among other things, that Catholic Church leaders in Boston will not be prosecuted for their involvement in the sexual abuse and cover-up scandal that's rocked the Boston Archdiocese and has now been reported in many other parts of the country as well. Joining us now to talk about the report and its repercussions is Peter Steinfels. He writes the biweekly Beliefs column for the New York Times. His new book, A People Adrift, The Crisis of the Roman Catholic Church in America, is due out next week. And he joins us from our bureau in New York City. And it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here. I wish it were a less painful topic.
So do we all. I wanted to begin, obviously we'll ask about reaction, but there was that moment in when we were speaking with Peter Pollard, and this perhaps relates to the subject of your book rather than this report, but the loss of faith, the inability for him to practice his Catholicism and to raise his children as Catholic, I wondered what you made of that.
Well, it comes across as, very true, almost inevitable in some of these terrible cases. I know of other examples where, in fact, it's been some kind of connection with the church, sometimes with a spouse who was a practicing member of the church, that brought people back through these terrible effects of something like this. When the Catholic bishops finally met and established a mandatory policy regarding how allegations would be handled last year, in June 2002, there were a number of victims who gave testimony, and several of them were introduced by bishops with whom they had established a relationship. So his story isn't the only pattern, but it is a very widespread and understandable one, it seems to me.
Have you been able, we heard earlier from Walter Robinson, no official response as yet from the Boston Archdiocese. What are you hearing from people inside the Catholic Church?
I haven't heard anything in particular other than the things that have been in the papers. There have been both responses, particularly from victims' representatives or victims' groups, of disappointment that the Attorney General didn't go far enough. There have been some expressions of skepticism. After all, he's engaged in a 16-month investigation and not been able to come up with any indictments. It seems that he could hardly say less than the kind of strong moral and legal language that he used at the beginning of his report. And I think that by and large, you'll not find a very strong, articulated response. And for this reason, I think a lot of church leaders are horrified by this. Many of them share some degree of responsibility, at least in hindsight, recognizing that they didn't do things that they should have done or they didn't understand the depth of problems that they should have understood. And I think they're very reluctant to make statements, even when those statements might be enlightening as to facts, because I think they feel, and I'm not sure that I could tell them otherwise, that almost anything they say is going to be heard as though it were whitewash or rationalization for things that happened.
Were you surprised? I got some indication of surprise from Walter Robinson about the scale of this, 50% more than had been uncovered in the Boston Globe. What struck you about the report?
Well, I was interested in his remarks in regard to that, because basically the Attorney General's report shocked me in the way that every time you rehear the same information, it shocks you, but it didn't surprise me. Most of it seemed to me, was in the general sense known, although I think within the body of the report there's some very helpful particulars. So I was interested in his figure, that this was a 50% higher figure for priest abusers than they had determined in the extensive work that the Globe has done. Now, let me, and I think that's very much worth looking into further, let me say there's an ambiguity that bothers me in reading the report. This figure is one given as priests who were accused against whom there were allegations. Experience tells me that in general, allegations are not false. But at the same time, if that's true, that the report didn't even use the word that that Mr. Robinson used, credible allegations, which is what he said the Globe had used, and so I'm a little puzzled about that, and wish that would be clarified. But in general, the scale of this kind of thing is extremely disturbing. I wish it were put into a little bit more perspective, as I think you had a caller who asked about in terms of other figures. I wonder what, for example, one would find about sex abuse committed within the Boston school system over a 60-year period. It just would be helpful not to diminish the seriousness of this in terms of what happens for the church, but to actually get us a sense of what the Attorney General calls massive and unbelievable, and really alert us to what my impression is an extremely harmful pattern of behavior that's not just limited to the church.
Let's get another question from a caller. Debbie joins us on the line from Minneapolis.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I first of all would like to say my heart goes out to all the victims in this case, but I do have a question, and I'm curious to find out why so many of them go back to the church to resolve the issue and didn't go straight to the police and press criminal charges, or why, after they felt the issue was not resolved to their satisfaction or appropriately through the church, they then didn't press charges with the police.
I guess in some cases the answer would be, the statute of limitations would have expired. But Peter Steinfels, perhaps you can help us here.
Well, I'm not talking from any personal expertise in handling these kind of cases, but I've read a lot of these stories and material, and it seems to me, first of all, this is something that's very difficult to reveal. People are often afraid that going to the law would result in a series of events that something they don't want made public would become public. It would be out of their hands. The whole question of people telling about this is extremely complicated. And then I think very important to recall, if we're talking about 60 years or even 40 years, social mores and attitudes about frankness and about sexual matters have changed immensely in that time. So many of these early cases, people would have been under great social restraints in terms of revealing this. In fact, the Attorney General's report that limits the number of, says, you know, there were fewer allegations in the earlier periods, the 1940s and 50s. I'd like to think that that was really because there were fewer cases of abuse. But I have a strong suspicion that that's really because the social atmosphere about matters sexual made it all the less likely than abused people would actually take their charges to anyone.
Thanks for the call, Debbie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. What does this report suggest to you about the way the institution, the church as a bureaucracy, if you will, it is one, of course, in addition to being a spiritual organization, about how it handled the crisis?
I think that's where a lot of the value of this report really is. It's in the body of the report. I think the outrage that Attorney General Riley expressed was understandable and appropriate, but it's where he traces the step-by-step procedures that the church in Boston instituted over time as the nature of this problem was recognized. And in fact, his own description of the behavior by different people in charge shows a degree of what we might call a learning curve, but it's also a learning curve that's always way behind the reality and never in its decisiveness. And I think that's very important for the future in terms of what can be done. I think it's a mistake to see this as a problem of cold-blooded church leaders who clearly knew that someone was going to abuse again and facilitated that happening. Instead, there were a whole series of bureaucratic failures to come to grips with this, to recognize the need to get the investigations out of the hands of clergy. I mean, clergy will always give the benefit of doubt to clergy, just like physicians do to physicians and police do to police. I think that's just a real something we can expect. There was a lack of realism about any kind of monitoring for people who had gone through serious treatment and then were returned to even some, not even any ministry dealing with children, but still there wasn't the monitoring that could keep them out of touch with children. The failure to report things to civil authorities. Sure, that was not required by the law. It would have been to the benefit of the church if it were had been required by law. But there were again, always behind the curve in catching up with the way that the society understood this problem. A failure to realize that they not only had to deal with the case at hand, allegations that were being made, but with potential allegations, with victims out there who hadn't been able to speak up because they thought they were all alone, they thought they were isolated cases. So I find the report's analysis, if you will, in the fine print, could be the basis for a lot of helpful changes, many of which, I have to say, are being put into practice. And one disappointing thing about the report is that, as far as I can see, it didn't make any reference to the new national mandatory policies, which will be mandatory on Boston as well as the other 194 dioceses across the country.
Well, again, obviously Boston is the epicenter of this scandal. How much are we talking about other places as well? What is going on there?
Well, there have been investigations and some degree of, some cases in, I think, well, must be two-thirds or more of the diocese, and I don't find that surprising if we're talking about going back over a long period of time. And the way in which different places have handled this has been distinctly different. And I think it would behoove us to look at a few places where they seem to have done it well, at least well from around 1992 or 1993. And I think you can fault just about every place for not, taking decisive action earlier. But there are some places that at that time did what's now become a national policy of setting up review boards dominated by lay people, often in some cases with a victim or a member of a victim's family on the panel who are given. Every allegation has to go through them, and there is a procedure regarding that. There's a procedure regarding immediately reporting things to civil authorities and so on.
Mm. We're speaking with Peter Steinfels, the author of the forthcoming book, A People Adrift, The Crisis of the Roman Catholic Church in America. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to a caller. Rita joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I'm a little nervous, so I got a cheat sheet here.
Okay.
I want to say I'm 51 years old. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. So with my age, you see that I was going to school during the thick of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I come from a family where 8 of us went to Catholic school, my brothers and sisters and I. I don't know how many hundreds of cousins, you know.
Sure.
And I never knew anybody who had this happen to them. That was my first point. My second point was that if you take 60, 1,000 people over 60 years. I'm very sorry for what happened to these people. And I think Bernard Law, you know, is beyond the law. But if you put that in perspective, like one of your last speakers just said, check the Boy Scout record or the Baptist church or camps or clubs. It's not, I just don't understand. I feel like we're being picked on. Does that make sense? A little bit out of proportion?
Peter Seinfeld said, do you, certainly she is, Rita's not alone in that feeling.
No, I understand what she's saying, and I have a mixed reaction to it.
I do too, but...
I think there's one reason that this story has been so visible, so shocking, and so closely followed. And in a way, it's a compliment to the Catholic Church. It's the fact that there is a real aura of sacredness still surrounding the Catholic priesthood, so that the violation of ordinary decency, let alone all the things that the Church teaches and that people are to abide by, is particularly outrageous. And one can see that the impact it had on people like the victim that spoke, Mr. Pollard, earlier, is extraordinarily powerful.
I completely agree, but could you, if someone could get some numbers and see how
right.
much this has come out in the past about Boy Scouts, about Baptist church camp. I mean, I'm not trying to pick
right.
on any other group.
Right.
I'm saying it's completely outrageous. It's completely horrible. But if you can imagine the millions of Catholics there are between Boston, they also talk about Fall River and New Bedford, which are not in the Archdiocese, you know, but they're part of the same state.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's
millions and millions and millions of Catholic kids who went to school that this did not happen to.
I do
like
agree that
Boy Scouts that it didn't happen to.
I do agree that the that what an earlier caller called the denominator is a figure that we need to be more aware of. For example, in the Attorney General's report, he says that 110 priests who were abusers were graduates of St. John's Seminary. And yet I don't understand why he couldn't have told us how many graduates of St. John's Seminary there were over that 60-year period. That wouldn't have been so hard to do.
Rita, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll wrap up our conversation with Peter Steinfels, maybe get a little bit to the subject of his new book about the Roman Catholic Church in crisis in America. And we'll take more of your calls. We'll also be discussing an article that's coming out in this weekend's New York Times Magazine. It's the cover story called Who's a Hero Now? Author Jeff Goodell was at the scene of the Kew Creek mine disaster a year ago, watched the miracle rescue. He's gone back to find out what happened to all of those men that suffered not only from stress and trauma, but from celebrity as well. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the report issued yesterday by the Attorney General in the state of Massachusetts delineating the scale of the child abuse and cover-up scandal that's gone on there for 60 years. It's been dominating much of the attention in the Catholic Church for well over a year and a half now. Peter Steinfels is with us. He's the author of a forthcoming book, A People Adrift, The Crisis of the Roman Catholic Church in America. It will be published next week. And Peter, I wanted to ask you, in the book, you say the Catholic Church in the United States must reform itself or suffer irreversible decline. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't believe that the Catholic Church, which represents roughly a fourth of the population in the United States, 65 million people or more, is going to disappear. I think the danger is that without a major transformation, the place of the Church in the lives of people who call themselves Catholics is going to increasingly diminish. And, Neil, let me mention one thing. The title of my book, A People Adrift, which clearly refers to a problem of leadership, has been my working title on this project since 1997. And the sentence that you, in effect, were just referring to about diminishing declining numbers or whatever or was written way back in the late 90s. And now, I had covered the sex abuse crisis before, when the wave of, from, say, 1985 to 1992, when these kinds of things were publicized. But my thesis is that there's a deeper underlying, some underlying issues, that the sex abuse crisis confirms in some way the problems of leadership, although it could be a lens that is distorting, because some of those problems go, you know, they deal with other subjects, human sexuality, the relationship of religion and politics, the way we worship, polarization in the church, the role of women in the church. And so they're related, but there are some other very basic issues that I started to write about, and then along came this to kind of accelerate everything, make it more urgent.
Well, Peter Steinfels, good luck when the book comes out next week, and we appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Peter Steinfels, as we mentioned, his book is A People Adrift, The Crisis of the Roman Catholic Church in America. He also writes the biweekly Beliefs column on religion and ethics for the New York Times and is a former senior religion correspondent for that newspaper. He spoke with us from our bureau in New York City.